So today we're having a very different conversation about sleep. Not just how long you sleep, but what your sleep says about your life, your relationships, and even your leadership. Because the truth is, you can be high performing on the outside and completely disconnected on the inside. Joining me is someone who is redefining what it means to truly rest and rebuild your life. Megan Mazzocco is the author of The Sleep System and founder of Well-Being by Design, where she helps people redesign their lives starting with sleep. So, Megan, this is going to be an interesting one, a powerful one. We're talking about sleep in such a different way. It's like paving a new road. I'm so excited for this conversation. Thanks for coming back and being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you, and Stacy and your audience for having me again. I'm really excited to talk about sleep in kind of a different way than most people approach it. I know the first couple episodes that we discussed sleep, we did talk about, how to sleep and why to sleep, and even how to notice yourself and what you're sleeping like, and that it's really an exercise that meets you where you are and, paying attention to yourself and sleep, it really starts to develop a relationship with your body that increases self-love and self-trust and self-awareness, especially of those parts that don't want to slow down and don't want to sleep. But today, the conversation that I want to have is you are your sleep self in and out of bed, for better or for worse.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, if I have a terrible sleep, like I feel like I'm dragging my butt the whole day and nobody benefits. Nobody. Because I feel like I don't know, before we hit record, you use the term toddler. Like that's literally how I feel. I'm so irritable. I'm on edge. I'm tired. And the only thing I'm thinking about is going back to bed.
Absolutely. So physiologically, a lot of things can change our ability to be a person in the world. And sleep is one of them because sleep is a biological imperative. And if you don't sleep, or you wake up sleep deprived, you will wake up at baseline anxiety, which means what happens physiologically is it increases your norepinephrine, which is a neurotransmitter that raises your blood sugar, your blood pressure, and your heart rate. So, right out of the gate, like right out of bed, you are like a crabby toddler or an angsty teen, and your body and your brain is distracted, going, "What's wrong? What's wrong? Something's wrong. Something's wrong." And that automatically makes you less resilient emotionally. It makes your cognitive abilities, it lowers them, and it also lowers your immunity just in general to, germs and viruses and disease. So you want to be well slept just to be a responsible human. And to think that 30% of people, according to the CDC, are sleep deprived. And the World Health Organization has declared sleep deprivation an epidemic in every industrialized country. And you're wondering, like, why is it so hard for us to human? Well, maybe we should be sleeping. And if you're not taking advantage of sleep as a biological imperative, as a way to ensure longevity and cognitive health, and or even as a biohack or an optimization, first of all, you should be. And second of all, there's other aspects of sleep that we really have been given and are taking for granted and not taking an advantage of. For instance, sleep is the original altered state of consciousness. So when you can understand how sleep is this sacred portal to self-knowledge and self-discovery and depth of connection, and that your dreams are your ultimate KPIs, key performance indicators, you will sleep with intention. And I think that, you know, well-being by design is really put together an ecosystem of, you know, how we need to move forward in the age of AI as humans to be in our age of sovereignty and are on our best human behavior. And yeah. I am the poster child for not taking advantage of sleep and taking sleep for granted and burning the candle at both ends. I can tell you exactly what not to do. And then I can tell you how I reconciled that. And I say, like, now from my own personal experience, rest is a reckoning. Like, it is a reconciliation. Like, when you really double down on sleep and rest.
100% agree. 100% agree. Megan, I want to ask you about the integrity gap. So you talk about something called the integrity gap, where how we're living and what we actually need are completely out of sync. Can you explain how sleep fits into that?
Absolutely. So the integrity gap is really when you're showing up not well slept and you're running like an crabby toddler with an iPad or an angsty teen with a budget. You're just out of character, really. You can't show up as your most highest and best and most authentic creative self. And like I said, I earlier in my life was the poster child for that. So what happens when you're in this state of what Dr. Ellen Vora in her book, The Anatomy of Anxiety, she calls false anxiety because it is a physiologically triggered anxiety. So I was totally out of integrity as someone who was persistently, consistently underslept and sleep deprived. I was out of integrity in my relationships with myself. I could not function as a journalist because I had zero creativity and my cognitive focus was so fuzzy. I really couldn't concentrate long enough to even complete a sentence. And I was so impatient with my kids. It was a terrible shame spiral. Because I was like, I'm not a good parent. I am not a good employee. And I also wasn't a good spouse. I didn't see in my life that because I was in this heightened state of anxiety, that I viewed everything as a threat. And studies have shown that when people are in a state of anxiety, when they are shown a neutral expression, they are likely to interpret it as threatening and negative. Yeah. So that is the integrity gap. And you really do end up second guessing and yourself, and you have an inability to trust your own judgment because you're not like this, you know, fragile person. It's just a very predictable neurological output of a brain that is operating in its own debris. Literally, your brain is accumulating garbage because you're not sleeping. The glymphatic system cannot clean out the hallways of your brain and those plaques and proteins that are associated with Alzheimer's and poor cognitive health outcomes. Even just 2 hours of being underslept causes 5% more of those kind of garbage deposits. And you know what they say, like, garbage in, garbage out. Your sleep self in bed and your sleep self out of bed. And it's really a shame if you've got like a lot of garbage in your head. It also like severs the connection between this amygdala, which is your, you know, fight flight response, and the prefrontal cortex, and which is kind of that gatekeeper. So you end up really just burning out, and you're burning out your body physically, and you're burning out your relationships. It was a disaster in every sense of the word, like health, marriage, parenting, professional life. And physiologically, it makes sense. But most of us don't know what we're doing to ourselves when we're underslept. Mm-hmm. But it is an integrity gap. You're out of integrity with your own body, and you're out of integrity in all of your relationships when you're not sleeping. So
I've heard a few different takes on sleep cycles, and I'm interested to hear yours, because I often hear people say that we should be syncing up with the earth's natural rhythm. So eating when it's light out, not eating when it gets dark, sleeping, you know, at 10 p.m. to say 7 a.m. Those are the best times. But then I've also heard that people are all different and built differently. And some people are night people, and some people are not morning people. And so different people, depending on what their makeup is like, need different sleep times or sleep cycles. I know for me, I feel like I used to thrive in the morning, and now I'm a little sluggish in the morning and I prefer to sleep in a little bit. What is your take on that?
Well, my take on that, as somebody who comes from the design industry and has dabbled in a little bit of evolutionary biology, is that we were evolved and designed to be spending 100% of our time outdoors. And so it is truth that our bodies and brains desire to be in the circadian rhythm of the day. And it's only in the last 100 years that the amount people sleep has fallen drastically. And that is because of the electric light. And we are kind of like moths to a flame when it comes to light and screens. So I don't believe that anyone could really claim their chronotype to be like, oh, I stay up all night and I sleep during the day, unless they have that specific sleep disorder that inverts, you know, the sleep cycle. It's like the delayed phase sleep. And some people, yeah, are night owls, and we needed that in tribes. You know, we did have to have somebody who was the night owl, who was the fire keeper. And then we needed to have, like, you know, the early riser, who was also going to be alert, you know, at first light or before dawn. So there are, within reason, very different chronotypes, but I don't think anyone is actually flipped. I think that is really due to our propensity to overstimulate ourselves on devices and screens and being able to stay up because of electric light. When you really want to discover your true chronotype, I would say go camping and try to be off screens and without convenient sources of electric light, and then see how your body reacts and responds. And again, like, we spend 90% of our time indoors, which separates our bodies from nature. We're not getting the weather, the humidity, feeling breeze, hearing trees and leaves rustling. We're not hearing nature sounds, especially in dense urban hubs where there's so much noise pollution. And this is all biophilia, or what our brains desire and find lovely in nature. It's just the way that we're designed evolutionarily. And we're also designed, our bodies are designed to walk 9 to 12 miles a day to dissipate the cortisol that's built up in the system. So again, that's another part of being in touch with how your body was actually evolved and designed, not kind of this epidemic of convenience that we are experiencing in modern society. So I would just recommend that you try to follow nature and get yourself closer to nature, and then take your estimate of your chronotype.
Right. Yeah. That's so true. You know, we've evolved into these beings that were so disconnected from where we came from. Like, we are literally part of the earth. Mm-hmm. And I know for myself, when it is summer and it's lighter out, I tend to put on my blinds. And I turn on a red light and I make my space into like a cave-like setting. And then that puts me into a different headspace in terms of where my nervous system's at. And I feel tired and able to get to sleep earlier. But I know if the blinds are open, and, you know, it stays pretty bright in the summer until like 9:30 at night, like, I feel like I'm ready to go. I was in Yellowknife and it was literally daytime, 22 hours. And it was just wild because I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm not sleeping as much as I usually am. And I feel so alive right now. So it's the sun and the cycles of the earth are so important. They affect us in so many ways that people don't really realize. I think it's really sad how disconnected we are getting. We are talking about it more and more now, how important nature is. But it's just, it's not enough. We really need to understand it even more, especially when it comes to our nervous system. And that's what I want to ask you about next. So many people are walking around super overwhelmed, stressed, and reactive. And honestly, I would even say that people are on edge literally all of the time. So what is happening to our nervous system when we're not sleeping properly?
Yeah, the nervous system is really just getting hijacked, and it's hypersensitive. Really, you want to think about what's happening around you and how you can handle that with more calm and grace. So we are kind of in this like VUCA world, right? It's volatile, it's uncertain, it's chaotic, and everything seems ambiguous. And technology is moving so quickly, especially with AI, that we can't even imagine our shared future. So the nervous system is not only hijacked with this norepinephrine, the increased heart rate, the increased blood sugar and blood pressure. It's also a lot of external pressure that appears like a threat, because you're underslept. So again, your nervous system, the role of your nervous system is to keep you alive. But when you're sleep deprived, the judgment of the nervous system is out of alignment with the truth and the reality of what's actually happening around you. And I think a lot of people also kind of get confused or even bent out of shape about their sleep scores if they're monitoring it on whatever Whoop or Aura or Apple Watch. But really, that number doesn't tell you anything. It shouldn't tell you how to feel or how your nervous system is going to perform. It's really about noticing how you feel. And if you are chronically underslept, you won't notice that your nervous system is hijacked and that you are walking around like an angsty teen or a crabby toddler until you begin to move back into an integrous relationship with your sleep and with your body. So I would just, yeah, make people understand and really emphasize that the nervous system is completely hijacked, and 30% of us are walking around like that, constantly in a state of high hypervigilance and overwhelm because everything feels like a threat. It's just not a great way to move forward as humans. In the age of AI, we need to get to a point where we understand that our relationship with ourselves and the depth of connection that we have with ourselves really reflects the relationships and the depth of connection that we have with others. And I think sleep is really a mirror. It reveals who you're being, like out of bed. we really need to go there with sleep, especially because, you know, that's one thing that AI can't do. I mean, AI doesn't have a nervous system either, but it can't sleep, and we can. And we've been given this incredible portal to the original state, you know, the original altered state of consciousness. Again, AI can't do psychedelics. It's not going to dream. It's not going to, you know, have this opening or this transformative connection with consciousness. That is something that only humans can own. So I think as we're moving into and through this sort of VUCA time of AI, the best thing that we can do is really double down on what it means to be human. And one of those things is sleep and dreaming, and the fact that we were given this altered state of consciousness, and we tend to take it for granted and waste it. And the other thing about this altered state of consciousness is it is studied in neuroscience. Like, sleep is a very interesting frontier. Like, they didn't know why we slept up until maybe 10 years ago. Like, it was a mystery. Nobody knew. Like, why would we put ourselves in this vulnerable, risky, like, unconscious state? Like, why? And then they figured out the glymphatic system only works when you're in the deepest stages 3 and 4 of sleep, where your brain is in that delta wave. The other part of sleep as an altered state of consciousness is you're not just in delta. That is, you know, stages 3 and 4, where you're in that really deep sleep. The glymphatic system's doing its job, cleaning out the hallways of the brain. And you're good. But then there's the lighter phases of sleep, which are associated with memory and learning and creativity and innovation and even emotional processing. And those waves, states are theta. And what is happening, this is like, ta-da, another OG altered state of consciousness that you get to work with every night. And that's why I say your ultimate KPIs, your ultimate key performance indicators, are your dreams. Because when you sleep, and again, this is neuroscience, it is not woo. When you sleep, all of your short-term memory or anything that you just learned, a new skill or new information, it gets put into your long-term memory. And so I guess if you compared it to a computer, which we are not, it would be like the disk defrag when that was a thing that had to be done on computers to consolidate memory. And so what happens when that short-term memory goes into your long-term memory is a number of brilliant things. One of them is you get new insights. It mixes the short-term information that you just learned with everything that you've ever known or experienced that's already in your long-term memory. So again, there are insights there that only you can unlock, and it synthesizes your life experience and your knowledge and whatever you just learned into wisdom. Again, that is something that is unique to only you. And this is happening while you sleep. And then finally, the other important part is the dreaming and these kind of flashes of whatever pictures or feelings or emotions that are being processed in this theta state. It's completely bypassing the prefrontal cortex, which is the egoic gatekeeper of the brain. And when you have kind of this like free rein on all the other parts of your brain, you're so creative. And this theta state is also ideal for healing. And because your brain is so suggestive at that point. So when you really go to sleep with some right. kind of an intention for like, what do I want to work on tonight? It's revealed in your sleep. And that is why it's really important to have a sleep journal or maybe to make a voice note if you do get some kind of an insight in your dreams or even in a theta state, or to notice repeating patterns that are coming up visually or emotionally. And also, like, your dreams are not only built on your current life, because consciousness is non-local. You're connecting to all consciousness when you're asleep, again, because you don't have the egoic prefrontal cortex gatekeeper. So you have access to so much more knowledge and information and wisdom and insight than you would in your waking time. And speaking of waking, there's moments between wake and sleep that is called a liminal state. So you have that as you're falling asleep, and then you also have that as you're waking up. And if you've set an intention for your evening, for your sleep, you will generally discover, you will get some insight between when you're awake and falling asleep, or when you're just waking up. And it's really subtle. And so that's why it's important to set an intention, because then it'll be more likely that you will hear this, see this, understand this, know this, and really take advantage of that liminal state. Because again, it is the OG altered state of consciousness. It is a portal. Mm-hmm. And too many of us are just not taking advantage of that. And another thing I wanted to touch on, when you're talking about these liminal states, is I'm a certified yoga instructor, and there's something called yoga nidra, and that is translated as sleeping yoga. In neuroscience circles, they actually call it non-sleep deep rest. And what happens when you are in a yoga nidra practice is you drop in to that liminal state of deep rest, but not sleep. So the brain is switching between alpha and theta, right? And so in this state, again, it's a very healing state. It's a very suggestive state. So people who are doing yoga nidra, or they are playing affirmations while they're falling asleep, they are really encouraging this kind of healing or behavioral change or answers and insights that come to you when you are sleeping. And even hypnotists know this. Like, that's how hypnotherapy works, is they're taking advantage of that liminal state of that theta brainwave state to program into the brain, like, you know, what ideas and openings that you really would like to move blocks or to, you know, open yourself to infinite possibilities that you wouldn't normally allow yourself to during regular waking state. So I always like to tell about a famous napper. And he was an inventor, Thomas Edison, and he used naps specifically to take advantage of the liminal state. So he would sit in a napping chair with three metal ball bearings in his hand and a metal dish on the floor. And he would start to fall asleep with the intention of solving a problem that he was stuck on. And when his arm would relax, it would drop the metal balls into the dish and they would clank and clang and wake him up. And then he would write down furiously all of the different ideas that came to him and came through him as he was drifting off. So really, it's just kind of a remembrance. We are remembering right now how to be more human and how to really celebrate this altered state of consciousness that we've been given, instead of throwing it away, you know, every morning. It's really the boardroom of the soul.
Yeah, it's so interesting how our bodies hold the answers to everything and how we've been taught to look for external sources of that. So you talk about plant medicine. We talk about reaching altered states through use of chemicals or plant medicine. When we have every tool with us all the time, it's just like searching for love. You know, there's this misconception. Our society tells us that love is a fairy tale. And when we meet someone, what we've been shown is that this person's going to complete us, when really the only person that can complete us is ourselves. The only person that can really give ourselves the love that we're seeking based on these societal pressures is ourselves. So it's so interesting how the body is just so intelligent. And I know for myself, whenever I'm in a dysregulated state, the only thing that works is getting quiet, getting silent, sitting in it and working through it. And sometimes, most of the time, that involves meditation. And it's interesting that you talk about falling asleep, because most people think that if they fall asleep in a guided meditation, that it's a waste. But no, all of that is like going into your subconscious mind and helping, process. And it's being stored in there. It's so interesting. And I think it's really interesting that most people, they call the day, like after a bad sleep, they'll be like, oh, I'm in a bad mood today because I had a bad sleep. But it's not because they're in a mood, it's because their body is dysregulated. And that's where I want to ask you about. You talk about something called homecoming. Can you explain what homecoming means?
Mm-hmm. So it's really just feeling comfortable in your own skin and in your own body. And this idea of really sleep as an embodied experience, it does require you to come home to yourself, to come home to your own wisdom, to come home to trusting how your body feels and trusting that you're noticing how your body feels. And then really just, like you said, instead of looking externally for some point of stimulation, some point of validation, all of those things, all of that focus that we've been putting externally, we turn that around internally on ourselves. It is like a homecoming, because that is when you realize, oh, like, I can trust my body. I can trust how I feel. I can trust the relationship that I have when I'm in integrity with sleep and with my body and with an intention for this sacred portal, right? And really knowing that in the truth of your body, that you can trust what you're feeling and what you know, that is the homecoming. And it also really, it helps you, like when you said, sitting in discomfort with any uncomfortable emotions or thoughts or feelings. Like, again, neuroscience has proven that when we sit for 90 seconds with that uncomfort, with that discomfort, or with that uncomfortable emotion, it tells the nervous system that you're going to be okay. But again, that is a regulated nervous system, not an underslept, sleep-deprived nervous system. So, So this homecoming, it really requires you to be in integrity in a relationship with your body and with sleep as sacred, and rest kind of as a reconciliation, as a reckoning, coming back to yourself. But I will say that we've been conditioned to look outside of ourselves. We've been conditioned 100%. To ignore our bodies and what they feel like and what they need. And that's no longer a strength, because humans don't need to operate like computers. We need to really go deeply into the broadest range of emotional experience possible, because it's been shown that the ability to experience a broader range of emotions is a greater predictor of well-being than happiness alone.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Megan, I want to go back a little bit, because I'm really interested for you to explain to the audience about dreams. So why are dreams so important?
Well, I was talking earlier about when you're dreaming, it is mixing all the information that you've ever known with things that you've just learned or discovered. And you can look at these dreams for feelings, emotions, sensations, situations, people, places, events, and really see what are the insights that you're getting, especially if you've set an intention for that night's sleep and that's a dream that you're getting. So there's...
Can you give us an example of an intention just so the audience has an idea?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. So if you are experiencing a difficulty in a relationship, you can say, you know, please show me what is the block or what is the missing piece that that would help to unlock this relationship. Or even if you're having a challenge with a work, you know, problem with a solution for a client that you're working on, your intention could be, please show me what is the solution for this client? You know, and it's something that only you have access to, which is amazing. And then again, your dreams will show you patterns. And once you start, and pattern comes from the word pater, which means father. And so really you can see what are your overarching patterns or beliefs or way of moving through the world, which is revealed by your unconscious in your dreams. So that's another way to really take advantage of this dreaming. And I think one thing that's really important is we should be talking about our dreams more. I mean, they're a depth of connection with ourselves. And then when you're sharing your dreaming experience or your insights with others, it may unlock something in them as well. So we really...
Right, because we often dream of other people, right? Like I know I have dreams of, I'm like, whoa, I had a dream that I met someone that I used to go to school with when I was 5 years old. And I'm like, I wonder what that means. And then sometimes I'll see them like the next week and I'm like, oh my God, that's crazy. Like I literally just dreamt of this person. Now I see them in real life. So everything is interconnected. Like we have no idea how much more than our physical bodies we are.
What happened to me just this weekend, I dreamed that I was fishing with my dad. I grew up fishing. And someone fell in the water because it was cold. And so I knew that it was spring fishing. We were on a lake. And so I texted my dad and I was like, Dad, were you fishing recently? And did everyone stay dry? And he said, Meg, you're spot on. I nearly fell out of the boat. I lost my balance when I hooked into a lunker. And he didn't fall out of the boat, but he almost did. So I told him to please go get checked out because I believe that I had that strong connection to his consciousness, to his experience, because it was such a traumatic event. And and clearly he didn't want me to know about it. So I'm really glad that I was shown that in my dream. And then I reached out and checked on him. And sure enough, it was something that needed attention and focus and encouragement. So I guess that's one example of like really coming home to yourself and trusting the information.
Trusting. That's exactly what I was just thinking. You're trusting it. Because we often just blow it off, you know, like we're all so connected and more than we think. And especially if we've been in a relationship with someone or a parent or a family member. Mm-hmm. So in waking state, like I was in a yoga class and I suddenly got these intense chest pains and I was like, what the heck? And I knew it wasn't mine. I just knew it wasn't mine. And when I got these chest pains, someone popped into my mind. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So when I got out of class, yoga class, I sent this person a message and I said, super random, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I literally just had these intense chest pains and your face popped into my mind. It turned out that this person was having extreme chest pains when they were biking and they had to stop and slow down and breathe. And they were blown away by that. So I often wonder, you know, how many situations like that occur and we just don't say anything. You know, wouldn't it be interesting if we actually spoke like that on a regular basis and reached out to people when these things happened, instead of feeling almost ashamed or, no, I could never say that to someone because it's too out there or woo-woo, you know, when it's actually real life. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Our dream IQ is biological intelligence, and it's really... Mm-hmm. the unfair advantage that humans have over silicon, right? AI can't access these emotional nonlinear truths at 3 a.m. or during yoga nidra when, you know, you're really open to non-local consciousness, right? You own this and definitely trust it. It's nature's design is never a mistake.
So Megan, I want to speak your language now. So how do we design our sleep instead of forcing it?
So really, we just look at ourselves as the end user. So I'm originally from the architecture and design industry, and I was a WELL AP and faculty, which is the professional wellness designation in the architecture and design industry. And I would teach architects and designers how to design spaces for optimal health and well-being. Not just physical health, but also emotional health. Like, for instance, we have the loneliness epidemic, and you can design spaces that really encourage gathering. On the other hand, there's also parts of the WELL building standard that address things like circadian health, how much exposure you're getting to light, and also encourage forward-thinking businesses and companies to enact sleep-friendly policies. So in designing sleep, you just take into consideration yourself and what your body needs in terms of when you sleep, what temperature you sleep best at, sleeping in darkness. I also encourage the use of the five senses. So maybe you have a favorite warm beverage or bedtime tea that you taste before bed. And maybe you have a scent that is calming for you, and diffuse essential oils in the room where you're sleeping. That's also been shown in recent experiments to enhance cognitive performance the next day. And really noticing when you get sleepy, how long it takes you to fall asleep, how well you felt you slept and how long you stayed asleep at night. And then when you wake up in the morning, what were your insights and what were your dreams? So you're designing sleep around what works best for you. And in the book, The Sleep System, 28 Days to Better Sleep, there are 21 days of evidence-based sleep hygiene tips. And again, those sleep hygiene tips are for everyone to try and experiment on themselves and see how their body responds. And it's, again, it's not about how long you're sleeping. It's not about your sleep score. We're not here to optimize you. We're here to notice you and your body and what works, because you are the end of one and the end user. And that is the context and the foundation for any good design. So in days 22 through 28, you're recalling, based on your notes, based on your journal, what were some sleep hygiene habits that really enhanced your ability to sleep, your ability to stay asleep, and how you felt in the morning. And that's really what it is. That's really what it means to design sleep. You're not comparing yourself to a score. You're not comparing yourself to anybody else. You are the most important end user when it comes to sleep. And it's all about noticing yourself and your body, and really this embodied experience of sleep, and bringing meaning to the sleeping hours and the liminal states is something that you don't get when you have a sleep score. You get is like, I did good or I did bad, or, you know, I did average. But again, everybody is different. Everybody is different. And especially, I was at the Women's Health Conference It was actually called the Live Long Women's Health Summit in San Francisco. And they're talking about how all of the data that is even out there has only been collected on men. So especially for women to come home to their bodies and to really have an embodied experience of sleep, it's really just about designing it around you and what works for you. So that is what I mean by designing sleep. And so it's about your environment. It's about your five senses. It's about how you spend your whole entire 24-hour cycle, whether you're getting light or movement or socializing. And again, when it comes to socializing, I really champion people, you know, talking about their sleep, talking about their dreams more, and designing social rituals around rest instead of stimulation. So make
the fun. There's these like early go to bed dance parties now that, you know, it's like no alcohol and from 7 to 10 p.m. in bed by 10:30. You know, I'm seeing a lot more of those popping up. Mm-hmm. What I'm curious is, Megan, when you started looking at your night routine, what was something surprising that made the biggest difference for you in terms of these sleep habits?
Actually, it's sleeping in the cold.
Okay.
So I have a theory about being really cold when I was born. And so I hate being cold. I absolutely hate being cold. So I would sleep.
Me too, actually.
I would sleep warm. And it's actually terrible. So what I discovered is when I learned scientifically that the optimal temperature for sleep is around 65 degrees. Again, everybody is different. I started sleeping colder. And that made a huge difference. And I really didn't want to do it because I'm like, I hate being cold. But another part of that is a warm shower is also a good idea before bed, because what happens is your body temperature needs to drop. Your core body temperature needs to drop about 1 degree to keep you in that deep sleep, that deep restorative sleep. So when you take a warm bath or a warm shower, or even just wearing socks to bed, it brings the blood to the extremities and it releases some of that heat so that your core temperature can drop. So I guess that was like my compromise, is like, okay, I can have a warm bath before I get into my cold room, or I can wear socks to bed and keep my feet toasty. So that was what really surprised me, because I had such an aversion to it.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. That's such a simple thing, yet it's so deep and it's so you, you know. It's like what you talk about by designing your sleep. Like, you get to know yourself on the deepest possible level. Right. And I love how you talk about our culture and how we need to switch the way we talk about sleep and how we should make gatherings rest centered. Most often we do the opposite. You know, you go out and people are trying to convince you to stay longer. And I know for me, I was always uncomfortable at a social event because I would want to leave early so I could go home and go to bed. Like, I just love sleeping, and I'm not ashamed to say that. And so to make social gatherings rest centered, to respect that and to honor that, I think is brilliant. And we'd all feel so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. I say we make the slumber party the new cocktail party. And
yeah.
It's really about self-regulation, your nervous system is calm, and co-regulation, really the ability to be calmly and quietly connected with your your besties. Priya Parker is really great at designing meaningful gatherings. And so if you are considering designing your own social rituals around rest, I would definitely check out her work. Her book is called The Art of Gathering. And again, we're moving this idea of sleep and self-care and rest as something that's individual and bringing it into social realms. So like I am going with a group of women next week from my yoga studio, and we are going to the salt caves. And again, it's just a group of women that are going to go do something that is very calming and relaxing and quiet, but also social as well. So I'm really excited that, you know, my local neck of the woods and my local group is going out to do a little social ritual around rest.
Yeah, that's so important. And what you spoke of earlier, which we will get into maybe next time a little bit more, about the importance of being around people who are co-regulators versus people who dysregulate us, and how impactful that is. Because not only do we need community, we need people. We need to surround ourselves with people who help our bodies regulate. And we can sure tell the difference of someone who helps us regulate versus someone who dysregulates us based on how we feel around them. Everything is energetic. And so that's another thing that people really should start paying attention to, like you mentioned earlier. Now, Megan, you've got a couple events coming up. You have a website, and I want you to tell everyone more about your event and also more about the work that you do and where people can find you.
Okay, absolutely. So we were just talking about co-regulation and self-regulation and dysregulation. And you were saying I have two events coming up. Well, actually, Mother Nature, it has she has the first event coming up, and that is the summer solstice. So that will be on June 21st. And the event that I have coming up alongside Mother Nature and the summer solstice is called Reset by Design. And what it is a signature process of five neuroscience-based nervous system practices that will help you to reset your nervous system so you can self-regulate well, cultivate that ability to sit in discomfort with a depth of connection with yourself, and then also, you know, bring that out into the world when you do start designing social rituals around rest. And so that will be on the summer solstice, June 21st, and that's 12 p.m. Central Time. And you can find me on LinkedIn, Megan Mazzocco, and then my website is meganmazzocco.com. And I'm also on Facebook. We have a Facebook group, Wellbeing by Design. So come and join us there in that community. And then also on Patreon, the Sanctuary by Wellbeing by Design is a community where we do focus on rest and our dreams. And there's something called the Sleep Portal. So if you would like to be part of our sleep community and designing social rituals around rest and talking about your dreams and really going deep with yourself and others, when we're talking about sleep as a sacred portal, that community is available on Patreon. Again, it's called the Sanctuary by Wellbeing by Design. And it's the membership is called the Sleep Portal. And then I also work in corporate, hence the KPIs, just helping people with workshops on sleep and really how to maximize the liminal states to unlock creativity and innovation, and also for leadership and development to really show up in integrity and in the highest place of character when you are in relationship with sleep, and your health. And that is how you lead well. I'm a Be Well, Lead Well certified guide. And that's what I'm bringing into corporate when it comes to workshops. And my keynote is really a manifesto for this whole entire ecosystem of well-being by design, which is sleep and the city, connecting rest and relationships. Because that's what I'm really doing here is helping people to see that they are their sleep self in and out of bed for better or for worse. So I like to share that during my keynote. So
amazing.
That's what I'm up to. And I would love for you to join me.
Amazing. I just really admire the work that you're doing, and it's so forward moving. You know, it's like the next phase of life. It gets me excited about where the world is going. You know, it's like there's no turning back now. Like, this is what we need. We're becoming so much more aware of what humans actually need. And we're not in this, like you spoke about earlier, transactional type environment anymore. It's about connection and community and nurturing, understanding ourselves, coming back to us as human beings. It's just so fascinating. So thank you so much for being here and having this beautiful conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Lisa, for sharing your audience with me and really diving into this exciting human technology and that we've always had access to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so thank you to our audience for tuning in. This conversation is such a powerful reminder that rest is not something that we need to earn. It's something that we need. And maybe the most important thing that you can do is not push harder, but come back to yourself. And so, Megan, thank you again for this amazing conversation. And for everyone listening, if this episode resonated with you, start small. Start tonight, because how you sleep is shaping how you live. We will have Megan's information in the show notes, including links to her book and her event that is coming up for summer solstice. And any other questions that you might have about her, you can check out her website. And if you think this episode would resonate with someone that you know, please send it to them and help them understand how important sleep is and rest. So until next time, take care, everybody.
Safe journey.
Attention, all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.